The Lord Jesus give you his peace. We have the strong teaching from our Lord and from the first reading from Isaiah this morning on fasting. What is an appropriate fast and what is not an appropriate fast? And it has everything to do with how we begin. Certainly there are scheduled times within the liturgical year in which we are in now that we are called to fast, and it is good and it's just. Those times that we're not called to fast, when we take fast upon ourselves, it's very important to examine the motives. So we look at the first reading with great attention because, do you call this a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? A man bow his head like a reed and lie in sackcloth and ashes. This rather is the fasting that I wish, releasing those bound unjustly, untying the thongs of the yoke, setting free the oppressed, breaking every yoke, sharing your bread with the hungry, sheltering the oppressed and the homeless, clothing the naked when you see them and not turning your back on your own. This is both in the concrete sense of doing corporal works of mercy, and even more fundamentally, it is in the spiritual sense of the sharing of spiritual goods and the clearing away of sin. Because basically, when we enter into fasting, we enter into some sacred ground whereby righteousness, or lack thereof, will be magnified. And so we want to make sure that it's a very, very good start. And those things that we look, for example, untying the yoke, being free of any serious sin, even venial sin, trying to militate against any attachments to them. So you might have noticed we're on day three of Lent now, and the method of temptation of the enemy, which the Lord allows in times of testing, oftentimes will be the kind of the afflicting the soul with some kind of sorrow as a preliminary or prelude, and then the suggestion or the temptation of some concupiscible satisfaction to alleviate that. In other words, a medicinal remedy for whatever sorrows the soul. So to be aware of that, because that's a dynamic that is prevalent with most all temptations. It can be in the opposite direction as well in terms of the pleasure and then the sorrow, but nevertheless, the more common temptation is with that. So we pay attention to our affections, our emotions, and our sentiments, and see how that we stay affixed to the cross of Christ. That is to say, whatever we're sent in terms to endure of sorrow of soul, that we do so. And we don't look to leave the cross or to depart or descend from the cross. John Cassian was at the basically the end of the period of the Desert Fathers in Egypt, and he, I think following along the coattails of St. Pachomius, was really a forerunner of St. Benedict in terms of communal consecrated life. And he has written quite a bit on the principal vices, and he's written a chapter on gluttony, which pertains to fasting. And so just this morning, going over some of the aspects of what he's written, because what he's doing is culling information, he's culling the wisdom of the Desert Fathers, who, he says, we must again recur to the traditions and customs of the Egyptians. That means those that were in the desert, like St. Anthony the Great, Macarius the Great, and you go down the line, just really giants of the ascetical, mystical life. As everybody knows that they contain a more advanced discipline in the matter of self-control and a perfect method of discrimination. They're saying, well, we're going to, he spent some time with them. In fact, he might have spent several years, I kind of forget. But the first thing that he mentions, and this is in his work called The Institutes, and so on the manner of fasting, a uniform rule cannot be easily observed. In other words, people are different, and we have different constitutions, different bodily constitutions. And he says, so fasting as a virtue is not the same as other virtues that we pursue, which basically adhere or revolve around to a firmness of mind, a steadiness of purpose, because this one is very much attached to the body. And therefore, he writes, because it does not depend only on mental firmness, since it has to do with the possibilities of the body, we have received this explanation concerning it, which has been handed down to us, again, the Desert Fathers, that there is a difference of time, manner, and quality of the refreshment in proportion to the difference of condition of the body, the age, and the sex, but that there is one and the same rule of restraint to all as regards continence of mind and the virtue of the spirit. So he's looking underneath, because the virtue of fasting is something that pertains to the body, but more fundamental to that is the the rightness of the conscience in terms of both its approach and its conduct, how we affect the fast. He continues with the reality in consecrated life. We should be very, very aware of it. He says that the mind is not intoxicated by wine alone. I didn't have any drinks this morning. The mind is not intoxicated by wine alone. He says, the belly, when filled with all kinds of food, gives birth to seeds of wantonness. Nor can the mind, when choked with the weight of food, keep the guidance of government of the thoughts. So it's the reality of being sated. And he points out, and it's true, it's in Ezekiel, the prophet looking back, convicting Jerusalem of her sin in light of the sin of Sodom. For how did your sister, that's not a good thing to be called, the sister of Sodom, how did your sister Sodom sin, except in that she ate her bread in fullness and of abundance? And this satiate, if I'm saying it right, being satiated, we have to militate against that, because that places us in a very, very dangerous position of inflaming the passions. You can see the utter folly and really a recipe for disaster of the standard American dating scene, right? What is it? Dinner and a movie. Okay. Great restaurant, lots of food, high quality food, on the precipice already, and then going to the movie with suggestive scenes, and then falling over. There goes the sixth and the ninth commandments. And so, contrarily, in consecrated life, we can make reparation for such folly at the table. And keeping these things in mind, it's also a very good thing to keep in mind, a good start. We'll always have the why for the fast in terms of a terminus, a person or a situation of intercession. Fasting, we should know, can stop wars. Very, very powerful. St. James, right? The prayer of a fervent prayer of adjustment is powerful indeed. And so, full on. John Cashin goes on and talks about when we have bodily weakness, it does not prevent purity of heart. In other words, I'm not that strong, I'm getting older, or I have a cold, or some serious sickness, and therefore my fasting is compromised to whatever degree. Bodily weakness, he writes, is no hindrance to purity of heart, if only so much food is taken as the bodily weakness requires, and not what pleasures ask for. It's an important distinction. I need so much to get through the day, but then brother body is going to ask and desire in excess, right? You give an inch, take a mile. And so we have to be very on top of distinguishing what's necessary and then what is over the top. Sometimes as you're coming out of a fast, you'll notice the walls cave in. Thanks be to God. And it all comes in. Congratulations. There goes all the merit. So to be aware of that. If there's a lot of back and forth and back and forth, up and down, a real unequilibrium, then we have to look at the purity of heart and also adjust according to the needs of the body. He continues, it is easier to find men who altogether abstain from the more fattening kinds of foods than men who make a moderate use of what is allowed to our necessities, and men who deny themselves everything out of love of continence than men who, taking food on the plea of weakness, preserve the due measure of what is sufficient. So you might make the parallel with chastity. It's just a lot easier to shut down. Shut it down. And, for example, a married couple. Then a little here, a little there, and then trying to shut down. But the higher virtue here and what we're called to is to be able to take at all times, whether we're deliberately fasting or just living the life, is in moderation. What I need. Because we're not going just for the paragon of skinniness. That's ridiculous. If we have that in mind at the beginning of the fast, people will notice that I've fasted. Well, then you read Matthew 6 and congratulations, you'll receive your reward. Wow, you look so much thinner. That's it. Congratulations, that's it. During the fast, we should realize that the consolations and the real divine presence that Jesus wants to give us are tremendous. And so not to be afraid of being generous, because when it comes down to it, food is highly overrated in terms of and the sufferings that behind the fastings. The food is necessary, of course, but what we're saying is that the delight in it, it's nothing compared to what Jesus wants to invite us within the next 40 days. Okay, so that's important to realize that at whatever stage we might be in terms of our physical health, we can achieve perfection of continence or perfection of purity of heart. Okay, other important teachings too, and just two more and then we're done. It lies in the measure, the right method of fasting and abstinence lies in the measure of moderation and bodily chastening, that this is the aim of perfect virtue for all alike, that though we are still forced to desire it, yet we should exercise self-restraint in the matter of the food while we are obliged to take, which we are obliged to take owing to the necessity of supporting the body. The point's already made, being able to distinguish what we need and what we want. The last point is this, is that the perfection then of abstinence, John Cashin writes, is not to be gathered from calculations of time alone, nor only from the quality of the food. He says, the canonical observance of fast is indeed valuable and by all means to be kept, but unless this is followed by a temperate partaking of food, one will not be able to arrive at the goal of perfection. So we can check off a lot of nice boxes during Lent, but then if we fall into, thanks be to God, that's over, and I'm just kind of exempt from the natural law, well, we haven't achieved what the goal that Jesus wanted to bring us to, which is this great purity of heart. So may all the saints intercede for us as we embark on this time of fasting, that we may, with great courage, but also with great discernment at the outset, it's not too late if things haven't shaped up in terms of exactly what's going on, what I will undertake to do. But today, let's make it most concrete and with great generosity and great resoluteness of heart.